Ways Means. This is Thursday, April 7th, 2005, and we're here today to begin discussions on House Bill 5073, which is the Department of Water Resources budget bill. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 5073 and call forward the agency. Please come forward, Director Ward, and our illustrious BAM analyst.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, as you said, you have Water Resources Department for you today. They're going to begin with just quickly going over some of the responses to some questions from Phase 1 and also their response to the initial prioritization the subcommittee made of their programs. Talk a little bit about performance measurements. Your staff had a meeting with them to talk a little bit about the changes that were discussed in Phase 1, and I think they made a lot of progress. And then we'll go into the budget detail with Lisa Pearson from BAM giving a presentation on the governor's recommended budget, and then the director will start in with his presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, there should be... I think Mr. Siebert has distributed a packet to you of responses to questions that were asked during our initial overview, and I'd like to just walk through those real quickly with you to make sure we've met your need. The first one is a memo to the committee from me dated February 7th. And this was a response specifically to...
Mr. Ward?
Yes, ma'am.
For the record, could you identify yourself?
Madam Chair, I should, after all these years, I should not have a problem with that. For the record, my name is Phil Ward, the Director of the Department of Water Resources.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a February 7th memo in response to a question from Representative Krupp in terms of what the governor's principles were that he asked us to base our budgeting on. So I'll just note that, and unless there are any further questions, won't spend any more time on it. The next memo in the packet is a March 14 memo to you, Madam Chair, and it's some basic follow-up information from the Phase 1 presentation. It articulates our 2004 performance measure data. I think Representative Krupp asked us to do what we could to gather 2004 data, so we've done that, articulated it here. We can talk. We've included that in some of our performance measure material in another memo, so I won't belabor it right now, but it's there for you initially. There's a listing of high priority watersheds and the price that is paid per acre to folks who lease water in stream was a question from the subcommittee, may have been Senator Bates, asking about how much water right holders were paid to voluntarily in-stream water. $40 to $62 per acre is the fee, or is the amount that we came up with when we pulled the providers of that service. The next memo is a March 30 memo addressed to Senator Schrader, and this was in response to a request from Senator Schrader that we received through Paul Siebert. And essentially, this is a kind of a detailed look at the Klamath adjudication and adjudications in detail, or in general around the state. And one interesting kind of piece there is there's a little map attached to this that shows you where adjudications have been completed in the state of Oregon, so you can kind of see where we still have work to do in that realm. The next piece is an April 7th memo, Madam Chair, addressed to you, and the subject of this memo is performance measures, and in response to your the deliberations we had with you in the initial overview hearings, and then discussions with Paul, that we've had some real fruitful discussions in the last weeks with your staff on how we can make our performance measures more meaningful. And we have some things laid out here with your permission, if you'd like to spend a couple minutes on that, Madam Chair, I'd ask Debbie Colbert to come up and help us walk through this, since she's our primary performance measure steward.
Thank you. We'd be happy to do that.
That's a new phrase, Madam Chair. I've not heard that. Performance measure steward. I'll have to remember that. That's pretty good. Not bad. Beats guru.
That's right.
It was a new FTE.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Debbie Colbert, and I work with the Department, Water Resources Department. As Director Ward mentioned, you have an April 7th memo, and it is based largely on some of the feedback that we received from the committee in Phase 1 and further discussions with Pelican staff since then. And we are basically proposing modifications to six performance measures based on that interaction. And I can just very quickly walk through the six performance measures and these proposed modifications for your consideration.
That would be helpful. Committee members, if you have any questions or comments, don't hesitate to make that known. Please proceed.
As described in the memo, the first is performance measure six. This is one of our performance measures that relates to our goal of equipping citizens with information. And so this is the percent of water management data sets that we collect and make available to the public on our website. And in response to your feedback, we are proposing to increase our 2005 to 2007 targets so that they reflect where we are in 2004 better. And ask us to reach a little bit more into the next several years. Similarly, performance measure seven, again related to equipping citizens with information, this is the number of hits that we have on our databases. And again, we would be proposing to increase our 2005 through 2007 targets based on the increase we saw between 2003 and 2004, which is about a 25% increase. We would propose to carry that increase forward into the future.
Senator Bates, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair, yes. I'm not sure I'm reading these numbers right. You had 1,696 hits.
Chair Morgan, Senator, that's correct. Of the population.
Bunch. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, this is something that is obviously an extremely important topic for a lot of Oregonians. Any idea where those, my region, where those came from, or any more information on all those hits?
Chair Morgan, Senator, we track the number of hits per database that we have, and it's databases such as our water availability database, our well log data, our water right mapping server that folks get on to look for water rights in their area. And so we can look at the data monthly and by data set. I do not think that we can look at it geographically across the state.
One big customer, though, Senator, is the real estate industry. There's a lot of interest on property when it changes hands, whether there are water rights on that property, what those water rights look like. So we have a tremendous amount of access to that website from folks that are involved professionally in land transactions.
Still an impressive number.
Well, and I think that
good service to the people if you're getting those kind of hits.
The really, I think, interesting side of this from an efficiency perspective is that this is information that the agency doesn't manually have to find and give people. This is all available to people, and the cost per transaction is much, much lower than it would be if we had to staff the agency up to a level where they provided this on a person-to-person basis.
Or they're printing books to be handed out that are not updated, it can't be. It's amazing.
So in your estimation, are the people that use this database using it professionally? I mean, you don't get people that come on just to recreationally scan what water is available in different areas, but these are people from the development perspective or some kind of land-based perspective that are wanting to use this information.
Madam Chair, I think that's an excellent characterization of the kind of users that we have. This is really an economic development tool our website has turned into, because the industry around land development and land use in this state has discovered this as a source of information that's really valuable to them. And you're also very correct in saying that this is one of the ways that we have dealt with declining FTE in the agency, because when we didn't have this available on the web, then people had to be answering these questions personally. So we're frankly, I think justifiably, really proud of our information service group and the work they've done here.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. My apologies for being late. When I get out of a routine, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. So,
Mr. Tough time.
I'm never late, and I just sit in my office reading. Mr. Ward, is there any way that's where I was. And Kathy goes, Mike, you have committee. We got folks in real estate, economic development. Good. I'm sure that may be the bulk, if not all of it. But is there any way ever to find out who's doing research? I imagine people doing in litigation, students. Is there any way we're going to be able to figure out who's really doing all this or not?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't think we track along those categories today. That's not to say that we couldn't ultimately, but my guess is that folks might be hesitant to identify themselves. Okay. Along those lines. Okay. We could make the attempt. Certainly, we've been doing some surveys in terms of our customer service response to the web site, and we could certainly incorporate into something like that. I think we have, in fact, what type of user there are. So we may have some general data we could resurrect by Monday on that.
Just curious. Thank you.
Please continue.
The next measure that we propose for the subcommittee's consideration adjusting is performance measure number 8. This relates to our goal of facilitating water supply solutions. And we currently track the percent of protested water use applications that are resolved informally. And what we would like to change it to... promote water supply solutions and track the percent of protests on water right applications that are resolved informally on an annual basis. And the reason we would like the committee to consider this adjustment is you see in 2004 that we have 131% resolved.
That's a really tremendous success rate. Yeah. We have more resolutions and there is problems.
We're not taking a plan here. We have more problems than we have solutions. Can we borrow 30% from that?
And
it would be helpful.
What this really reflects is carryover on applications that may be protested in one year and resolved in another. And so the modification that we would like you to consider would address this interannual carryover, because it would track in any given year just those protests that were resolved. Were they either resolved informally through some type of settlement? Did the parties reach a settlement and withdraw the protest? Or did they have to go to contested case or some other formal mechanism to resolve them? We think that this would address this measurement issue that we found in this measurement.
That makes sense. Okay, let's go on to number 10.
The next is number 10, and this tracks efficiency, the number of water rights administered per FTE, and based on subcommittee response in phase one, we would propose to drop this measure and use our other performance measures to track efficiency. It's under performance measure number 11. It currently tracks the number of water rights, certificate, and transfer application final decisions that we issue per year per FTE. And based on subcommittee discussion and then further discussion with LFO, we would propose replacing this one with two new measures that actually track our processing time. So the amount of time that it takes us to issue an initial review on a water right application and the amount of time it takes us to issue a preliminary determination on a transfer. And we do not have any suggestions for text or targets to present for you today. We would like to have an opportunity to keep working with you over the next month to come up with some appropriate descriptors and targets for those two new measures. And then finally, under performance measure number 12, which is the number of places where water is taken out of stream and used beneficially versus our FTE of field staff, in response to your discussion in phase one, we would propose to adjust our 2005 through 2007 targets to be more consistent with recent times and numbers of FTE.
Questions or comments on the performance measures? I think you've done a very good job of addressing the committee's concerns. And the one in measure 8 of truthing up the information so it actually makes sense. I think you've done a good job there. And we'll just kind of put these then on the back burner until we go into work session, and we'll bring them back out again.
And Madam Chair, I'd just add for the record that Mr. Siebert was really helpful with us on this. We met with him a couple times and were able to. He was a partner
somewhat
in this.
Of a performance measure guru down in the center of the building.
Madam Chair, the next piece is you've asked us to talk a little bit about prioritization, and that I think that's the last document in that packet that we laid out for you. I hope it's there. You made a couple of adjustments in our prioritization.
No. You should have, Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have a version that we passed out with our memo material. You should have a long version. If you don't, that looks like
this. Is this yours or mine?
Oh, is it up? Did you is that our office?
This is one. Yeah, I've got some other copies, though.
Oh, okay, so it didn't get in here. All right.
What we attempted to do here, Madam Chair, was simply adjust our prioritization list, which we presented to you according to the action that you took the last time we met. So I would just note a couple things. You moved to number one, the public safety piece of the agency, our well construction inspection, our dam safety program. You moved that up to the top, and so this prioritization list reflects that. It had been down at number five. You moved it up to the top. Fairly simple move. The other move that this list that you're looking at today reflects, it reflects a switch between 11 and 12. You moved the citizen response and public information over the policy legal work. And certainly we think both those are important pieces of the agency, but we have no quarrel with that adjustment. The last thing in discussions with LFO, we just wanted to visit, because particularly, Madam Chair, because you raised it last time, is what about this constitutionally established program, mm-hmm. the loan fund? And we have that, and it remains at the bottom of the list. This is a program that is established and required by the Constitution of the State of Oregon. And so certainly if you desire to move that up the top, we don't have any problem with this. It's at the bottom because it's not being used very widely today, and we don't anticipate, frankly, it being picked up much in the future.
Well, in committee members, in response to the issue, we did have a pretty good discussion during the prioritization process about the shape of this program and the reasons that you put it on the bottom of the list. And my recollection is that we ended up leaving it there and just essentially put it above the not ranked stuff. And I think that it is maybe not a conversation that's really worth having, because there's no general fund in it anyway. So it really, in the grand scheme of trying to figure out how to spend general fund, doesn't matter where it is.
We would agree, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So that, unless I'm missing something, is the things you are the things you ask us to bring back to you at the beginning of the phase two exercise.
Okay, so just to reiterate what I think I'm hearing, Mr. Ward, then, is that the way that the committee, the changes that the committee chose to make in the priority rankings are not the issues with the department, that the department can work with this priority ranking.
We're comfortable with the action you took, Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, so let's then just put this off to the side till we go to work session. Good. Did you have a question?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Let's go ahead then and talk about the budget detail. Lisa.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'll be working from this document that should have before you. And this is a very brief summary at a very high level of the governor's recommended budget. The agency will be filling in right after I finish with details about the packages and any other kinds of detailed questions you might have. So I'll move through this very quickly. Turning to page 2, there's a slide showing the total funds and general fund lottery funds for the natural resources program area, with each of the agencies that are in this program area lined out. And water resources is 2% of the total funds and 8% of the general fund. Turning to page 3, the governor's principal budget divided, or this agency is divided between two of those principals. One we refer to as the economic principal, and that would be the second bullet there. Oregon has a positive business climate and invest in economic development in order to create and retain sustainable businesses and family wage jobs. And then the other principle was what we call the environment principle, and that was the Oregon has a healthy balance between growth, infrastructure development, and environmental protection. Now, the next four slides in your presentation document are different views of the governor's recommended budget. The first one is on page 4, and this shows the budget by fund type. And general fund is the largest kind of funding for the budget at 66%, and that's followed by other funds at 28%. And other funds are derived from various sources, including fees for services, interagency agreements, and service contracts. Some examples of the fees for services are water rights, application start cards, hydroelectric, and water rights transfers. And there's an interagency agreement, as an example, with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. The department provides some administrative assistance to the Watershed Enhancement Board, basically on a contractual or interagency agreement kind of basis. The third largest category is federal funds, and those come from, for example, the Bureau of Reclamation and the U.S. Geological Survey. And matching requirements vary. Some are in kind and some are actual percentages. So if you have questions about that as you get into the agency detail, I'm sure they can answer specifically. On page 5, this is the second view of the governor's recommended budget, and this is by program. There are 6 program units in this budget, and the largest is field services at 37%. This is basically where the hard work gets done in terms of the actual direct assistance and efforts to locate water, help people locate their water rights, etc. Technical services is the second largest, and that's at 29%, and that supports a lot of the work that is done by the field services division or program. Water rights is the third largest at 13%, and that's where, for example, the Klamath adjudication rests. And then the fourth largest is administration, followed by the director's office, and then the Water Development Loan Program, which you've heard isn't really in use at this point. The third view is on page 6, and this shows the budget broken out by category. Personal services is the largest category of expenditures at 67%, followed by services and supplies at 26%, special payments at 5%, and then debt service at 2%. And the debt service is the other funds non-limited that you saw on the earlier slide showing the different fund types. That is exclusively debt service.
Is that related to the loan program or related to the building?
Madam Chair, it is the Water Development Loan Program.
Okay. And so what's related to the building is just a lease, a DAS assessment, basically?
Madam Chair, yes. It would be built into the rates that would be charged to the agency for So moving to page 7, this is a slide showing the historical information as well as the proposal from the governor. There have been some changes over time. In the period between around 2000 to the current time, we of course went through several special sessions, and in those special sessions, there were some reductions to services and supplies, regional support positions. Also, in the 2003-05 biennium budget, there was a switch of general fund for federal Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds. They're federal when they come into the state. They show up here as other funds. So it's a little bit confusing, but it is, in fact, originally federal funds. And the governor's budget proposes to do essentially the same thing that we did in 2003-05, just to move about $2 million of general fund over into the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds. There are some differences between the 2003-05 legislatively approved budget and the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget. These primarily have to do with changes to personal services that result from the PERS rate. There was a difference or an increase from the current 03-05 biennium rate to the rate that is going to be charged for 2005-07. There will be an adjustment for that because subsequent to the governor publishing his budget, the PERS board went ahead and took action in February of 2005, and the rate that we used last fall was higher than what eventually will be used, and so you will be seeing adjustments in work sessions from Legislative Fiscal Office to bring the funding down to the level that it needs to be for the new rate. Also, there were changes to services and supplies. You mentioned the North Mall office building. There is a rent change there. And then there are a number of policy packages that essentially continue a number of limited duration positions. And these are primarily funded with other funds. So you can see that other funds does change between 2003-05 and the proposed budget. And it isn't because of entirely the change or the switch from general fund to other funds under the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. Some of it is, in fact, continuing some of the positions and some of more of the policy packages. You might also wonder why the non-limited has gone down over time, and that is because that is the Water Development Loan Program, and as the debt has been paid down and there has been no real usage of it, there has been no additional debt really created, so it has in fact gone down over time. And then the federal funds have gone down between the 2003-05 biennium and the 2005-07 biennium because there was a one-time infusion of federal funds for the adjudication in the Klamath Basin, and that was in a policy package 161 in the 2003-05 biennium budget. And that was phased out because it was one time. So moving on to page 8, talking about major policy issues, and the director will get into this more and he will do a much better job of it. But there is greater demand for water than there is supply. The population has grown. The economy grew over the past 15 years as well. So the state is nearly fully allocated, if not actually fully allocated. That means that transfer of water rights has become increasingly important in order to allocate the water where it's needed. And the agency really needs to be able to provide the data and for surface and groundwater decisions. There's also greater complexity because of, one, the population has grown, and as it's grown, it's moved into areas that can have problems with different potential listings under the Endangered Species Act. And then there are water quality issues. So this has complicated the agency's work. And then over time, fewer positions have been available to the agency, and so they've relied more heavily on information technology as a way to produce material that's needed in order to help Oregonians in their businesses and also make sure that water rights are not damaged in any way. So moving to page 9. The governor's budget invests...
Oh, Representative Shoffer.
Will Mr. Ward speak briefly to what you just said about potential water rights being damaged, especially concerning droughts and people monitoring people getting... Someone expressed some concern to me about the ability of people on the staff to make sure that folks aren't using too much water, especially in these drought-stricken areas. I don't know if we want to ask that now or later.
We could probably go into that when we get into the field operations, because from my personal experience, there's a great deal of the work that the water maskers do out on the ground.
That would be appropriate, Madam Chair.
Senator.
Just a statement that there's the state supply is nearly fully allocated, but you know, I have real issues with the Columbia River. I think there's a lot of water we're not using. Isn't there a 30 million acre-foot reservation or something like that that happened back in the early 1990s, of which we're not using right now, that we potentially could be using?
Madam Chair, Senator, there is. I think it's still on the books by rule, is it not? A significant reservation of water for economic uses from the Columbia River. We were informed some years ago by the Attorney General that reservation was not appropriately done and had no legal standing. Is that correct?
As a matter of reference, I mean, 30 million acre feet of water would be enough to cover the entire state of Oregon with about a half a foot of water.
So okay. Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
Has anybody challenged that opinion?
We certainly have not, Madam Chair, Representative.
All right. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Investments in the governor's recommended budget are to add some resources for the contract work for expedited application processing. This is an idea that came out of the 2003 session, and it allows folks who want to pay a little bit more to go ahead and get their permits processed faster. And there is a bill that I'll mention later that would remove the sunset from the 2003 legislation to allow that to continue. And then very generally, there are continuations of limited duration positions for field staff, technical services. There's a limited duration position that's continued for the well log database. And then there are also resources added for the Klamath adjudication. That would include limited duration positions that really would continue on, and then also legal costs, which in the past have not been funded at the level that they typically have actually spent at. Going on to page 10, there are some reductions. There are eliminations of positions for final field surveys, water use reporting, information technology programming, water rights certificate issuance, customer service and administrative support, and also for the Willamette Basin reauthorization study. That particular one, the reauthorization study, apparently the federal government is engaged in an ESA review, and so that is considered not to be as damaging a reduction for this current biennium when we're looking at things this or last fall, because that study was going to be delayed until after the ESA review occurred. And then there's also a reduction to groundwater investigation funding. And the reductions essentially came from the House Bill 3182 list that is in your agency budget binders. So if you want to take a look at that list to get more details on them, that would be where to look. On page 11, we continue with major policy issues. And this is an issue that isn't really a reduction. It's a change in the way we're funding certain activities. And that would be the fund shift from general fund to Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds that I mentioned earlier. It's about $1.8 million. It was about $2 million in 2003-05. It's primarily field services positions, water rights specialists, regional management types of folks. And again, this would show as other funds in this budget. And then fee and revenue issues, there are a couple of bills that pertain specifically to the budget. First one is House Bill 2186. That is the one that would remove the sunset, among other things, and allow that expedited permit processing, application processing to continue. And then House Bill 2123 does a number of things. Current law restricts the ability to change from surface to groundwater use, and there's no process for modifications of pre-1955 water use registrations. So the bill would do that or address those issues, but it also would allow the Water Resources Commission to go ahead and set fees for this kind of work. And that finishes up my presentation. If there are any questions at general level, the director will be getting into the details.
Questions? Well, let's just dive right into the detail.
Madam Chair, we've prepared this brief slideshow, and what I hope to do quickly is to put this budget in context a little bit, just real briefly touch on just a few slides relative to our some of the general agency information. You'll recall that our mission, two co-equal goals, stewardship of the resource and making sure there's supply available for economic uses and others. We are overseen by a rule-making commission, the Water Resources Commission. We currently have a couple vacancies in that commission, and I believe the governor is considering folks to move forward for Senate confirmation, hopefully in the near term.
Can you back up? I was wanting to see which ones are vacant, North Central and Northwest. Okay.
And then we do have Tyler Hansel from Senator Nelson's region is overdue. He's actually staying on, but he's finished his second term. And then Jim Nicano from the Eastern region will be up the end of June. So we have we've got some real work to do, and I think some good nominations for commissioners have come to the governor's office in recent weeks. And so we've been in consultation with the governor's office on this issue. We're hopeful that something will move forward for Senate consideration soon.
So the members of the board are eligible to serve 2 4-year terms, and then they can't be recycled anymore?
2 4-year terms, Madam Chair, and then I think they have to take a term off before they could come back. But the statute does allow folks to serve until they're replaced, and that's the situation with Mr. Hansel.
And how often do they meet?
We meet quarterly at least, Madam Chair.
And how involved are they in the operation of the department? What kinds of decisions do they make?
Madam Chair, excellent question. They are not involved closely in the day-to-day operations of the agency, but all of the major policy issues and all of the rulemaking rests within the purview of this commission. So they are a true policy-setting and rulemaking commission. All the major policy issues facing the agency are presented to the commission, and then they adopt. They are the final arbiter on all our rules and then also on a number of the legal issues that we face. They are the final decision maker on a number of those things.
Thank you. And House Bill 2123, that would currently the commission is not allowed to set fees for these specific actions, or do they right now set fees?
Madam Chair, Representative, the commission sets fees in a number of areas. This would authorize them. That legislation, which I think we'll talk about a little more later, would authorize them in a new area to set some fees.
Thank you.
Again, just quickly how we're organized, and if we have time in the 2 days you've allotted, we will have our administrators actually present a little detail on their programs, and hopefully we can talk at that time when we talk about field services relative to Representative Schaffler's question, which I think is a real good one. Technical Services Division, the Water Rights Group, Field Services, then our Administrative Services Section, and the Director's Office. I wanted just to note for the record why we feel the work we do is important to Oregonians. Certainly people's livelihood depend on their certainty in terms of whether they can use water or not in this state. And our economic as well as environmental health in this state is dependent really on a lot of the work that we do. We've managed the state's water resources to ensure a sustainable long-term supply. That's something that, that frankly, we have to pay careful attention to in the years ahead as we grow in population as a state. And there's a definite public safety component to what this agency does. And then, as we've already discussed in detail today, there are a lot of people interested in the data that this agency produces.
Thank you. I had a question, Phil, about the Drought Management Council, the Drought Advisory Council that the governor just recently pulled together again. Do you staff that? Do your technical folks provide advice to that council? Or what exactly is the role of the Water Resources Department in drought management?
Madam Chair, Representative, the Drought Council is actually staffed by the Emergency Management Division. And their representative that sits on the Drought Council is a gentleman named Dave Casson. However, we are members of the Drought Council, and we chair the Water Availability Subcommittee of that council. So we're the technical water folks on the council, even though it's chaired and staffed by the Emergency Management Division. And Barry Norris, who you'll have a chance to hear from probably Monday, is our representative to that group.
Let's proceed.
Lisa touched a bit on these, but we see our major budget and environmental factors as you see them here, the increasing workload with the decreasing resources, always a challenging issue, satisfying additional demands in a largely appropriated system, getting more challenging as we go along. Drought and long-term water supply issues, certainly the drought has put an exclamation point on some of the long-term water supply issues that we're facing in this state, but they are very real and are a part of our decision tree there at the agency. And then the adjudication issue, which you're all very aware of, is a significant issue.
Just a comment.
Representative Shelton.
Wouldn't it be almost safe to say in a largely, in certain cases, largely overly appropriated system? I mean, aren't we over-appropriated in places?
Madam Chair, a representative, in some places, I certainly think you could characterize it as such. The way the Western Water Law was designed to work, this first-in-time, first-in-right system did anticipate times of shortage. In other words, if you're a senior user, then you get to keep using your water longer than a junior user. So the way Western Water Law is set up, it can lead to over-appropriation, but the way that is managed then is through that doctrine of prior appropriation.
That's when those local water masters have to go out and check out all that stuff and sort it all out.
I just wanted to note this, Madam Chair, just to read, you know, this is a gratuitous slide in some senses, but I just wanted to highlight again the fact that we're looking at some of the lowest staffing levels that we've seen in recent memory for the agency.
Well, and again, I think that this is a great example of the triumph of technology, because I don't think that graph would look anything like that with any kind of customer satisfaction at all without the great work that the agency's done in technology.
I would agree, Madam Chair, on that. The work there certainly precedes my time with the agency, but I'm deeply appreciative of what we've done there. This slide relates, Representative Schaffler, to your earlier comment. And I just wanted to note, you can see the green and the blue area there where water is available for further appropriation. But the reason I wanted to note this is that you may have caught, there's been some press attention recently to a proposal that the governor put forward for federal funding that would bring some federal dollars to our agency to actually inventory opportunities for additional storage of water in this state. And we're not just talking about above ground reservoirs. We think much of the key opportunity in the years ahead is going to be below ground storage, aquifer recharge. And so we wanted to just note for the record that this federal funding request is out there. It's something that this committee has asked us in years past to attempt to find funds other than state general fund to conduct this activity. And so we have been flailing around on this issue for some time, but there seems to be quite a bit of interest towards this little federal funding package that we have out there today. Current water conditions, we've made some ground in the last couple weeks, and we're deeply thankful for that. Our water masters, I think, are deeply thankful for that. And we've actually had irrigation districts not turn on and start using water, so they're continuing to store. However, as you can see by the column in the far right, the stream flow forecast for this season is not real good.
So what you've got are basins, then you've got the percent of snow against what?
Get your percent of snowpack against normal, what we'd consider a normal snowpack season. So in Oahu, we're 51% of normal.
So we have nothing that even approaches 100%.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, and then the storage, is that the percentage of the storage that currently has water in it?
That's correct. So in the Oahu system, there's a tremendous storage system, the Oahu Dam, that actually can store enough water for their uses for 3 years when it's full. They're at 42% right now.
So actually, the Deschutes is in good shape. And the Rogue Umpqua.
Rogue is not too bad.
And then the Senator Nelson?
As I said, these are as of March. One's at March 21st and one's at March 3rd, but you said that...
It should be March 1.
March 1.
Things have improved since then.
Things have improved. Is there a comparison?
Things have improved. We don't have the... This is the latest data that we have, isn't it, Barry? So things have improved since then, yes. But I think the streamflow forecasts are going to be fairly consistent. One of the results of having such a low snowpack is you don't have, you know, that's our natural storage system here in the state of Oregon. And so when we don't have the snowpack, we don't have the kind of time release of water. And so we're going to see these kind of stream flow levels late season.
Question. Have you done a similar analysis looking at aquifer recharge? Because obviously by not having the precipitation we've had, or lack of precipitation, our aquifers aren't recharging. So do you do any similar analysis for groundwater supplies?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think the short answer there is that in the deep basalt aquifers that we rely on so heavily here in Oregon for our groundwater use, they are not quick responders either to lots of precipitation or to drought. So when you have extended drought over time, then you'll see a drop in those basalt aquifers. Senator Nelson's area is probably most famous in the state for decline in basalt aquifers that are heavily used. I live on a piece of the home farm south of Independence, down along the Willamette River, and I'm in an alluvial aquifer. My well is very shallow, and so we see response to drought times in that kind of aquifer, as well as this kind of precipitation will bring a positive response. But we don't have a statewide quantification of those responses.
Thank you. Yeah, I still have time now. I don't know who I am or where I am at the time. Give me an idea of what this looks like over a longer period of time. We had some bad droughts back in the 80s, and we've had flush years since then. Do we see significant impacts because of this? And for people who have inflow for farming, like climate phase, when the flow is down, it's pretty serious for them. What does it do to fisheries? What does it do to mixing zones? What does it do to to our pollution contents of our major flows. I mean, is this really, oh my gosh, the sky is falling, or is this, well, we can run 40-50% differences from year to year and not make a huge impact? What does the picture look like if you look at, you know, like a 20-year situation?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think, and let me just give a quick example. In 1977, we had the poorest water year on record. And it looked like we were going to beat that until these recent rainstorms we've had here this year. But thankfully, we probably will not. 1977 was an interesting anomaly because it was sandwiched between two wet years. And so the significance of the conditions that we're experiencing today are that we are in a season of 4 or 5 years of below normal water conditions. Now, we have a tremendous water resource in this state, but this is a situation we would prefer not to stay in forever, because over time, and I can't quantify the length of time off the top of my head, but over time, we will see diminished groundwater and surface water resources, and it will impact how we do things in this state. The key is, over time, are we in a long-term trend? Some would argue that we are, and that there's fairly good data in that regard. Some would say, are not ready to say that yet, but the key is how long it lasts. Just a final note on the Klamath adjudication. I just would note here, we feel like we've made really great progress on the adjudication. We're down to the really tough stuff. I think Representative Krupp may have identified last when we talked about this last. We have a schedule for the adjudication that completes all of our hearings between the parties contesting each other's rights by the end of 2007. If I were to wager on that, Madam Chair, it would be that we might not make that schedule.
What a surprise.
So that's the bad news. The good news is that we are making consistent process on this very expensive thing. The other piece of bad news, and Lisa mentioned it earlier, so I just would highlight it, is that we had hoped at one time to get significant federal funds to help with this project, because a lot of these claims are federal claims. The federal courts have decided that the federal agencies did not have to contribute to this project, so we are doing this without the benefit of federal.
You'd nice be able to do that, wouldn't you?
Right.
Oh, that's not our bond. That's not a problem.
Not to belabor the longevity of this adjudication, but are you in a position to give us a new goalpost number, or do you want to stay out of that right now?
Well, our story, Madam Chair, is that, by golly, we're going to finish the hearings by the end of 2007.
The question is, are you sticking to it?
And we're attempting to stick to it. I would think that could slip into 2008, but I think there's a real possibility that we could have this adjudication wrapped up by the end of 2008. And our goal is to present our findings to the Circuit Court in Klamath County early in 2008.
And then where does the state, once the results of the hearing or the final order is delivered to the Circuit Court, what's the state's responsibility at that point?
My understanding, Madam Chair, and Dwight, you can tap me on the shoulder and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that it's our job to bring our conclusions in one big package to the Circuit Court. And our recommendation will be to the Circuit Court in Klamath County that they adopt these findings as we present them. That, of course, is up to the Circuit Court.
But this is going to be some...
a rather large document, Madam Chair. Yes.
And so someone's going to have to hang around and explain this all to them.
I'm certain we'll have a role in consultation with the Circuit Court. Yes, and I think...
our financial obligations will continue until the court is finished its deliberations.
Madam Chair, I think that's correct, yes. The level, you know... the level may be reduced. The level will certainly be reduced once we deliver our findings to the Circuit Court. The thing I think we have to keep in mind, and that we saw this earlier today in the map that we presented, is that there are some portions of the state that are not adjudicated, and we have not adjudicated groundwater at all in this state yet. My recommendation, frankly, to you all.
That's right.
However, I think our recommendation to you all will be that we never do an adjudication on quite the same scale as the Klamath in the future, that we take smaller bites.
But don't you necessarily need to do them on a kind of a drainage type basis? I mean, you couldn't do half the Klamath.
Madam Chair, that's exactly right, and that's frankly why we're in this scale of an adjudication in the Klamath. As we work forward in the future, for example, as we work in the South Coast, maybe one of the areas that we need to go to next, there are smaller drainages that we can bite off, smaller packages, I guess, is kind of our thinking, rather than taking the whole South Coast in one lump.
From the global perspective, are the adjudications over time becoming more complicated, or is this one just extraordinarily complicated because of the scope of land that was covered?
Madam Chair, the Klamath Basin is extraordinarily complicated by its size, but also by the fact that you have the federal government claiming significant amounts of water in the Klamath. You have the tribes claiming significant amounts of water in the Klamath. And then you have both you have irrigators within irrigation districts supplied by the federal government and irrigators that are independent of that federal project. So it is a fantastically complex adjudication.
So you're going to pick a really wet part of the state next and hope to avoid a bunch of that?
With short rivers.
We're going to, Madam Chair, we are going to pick something easier next time.
I think you can avoid that. You mean try the Willamette ones, you know?
The Willamette.
That should be a fun one.
Well, we did get a map on what was left over.
Yes,
that
there's
was one of the things that the department gave us. It wasn't that map.
So, Madam Chair, I would just note in summary, kind of again of this this refresher overview, that our programs in this agency are extremely integrated. That it's very difficult to find a discrete program in the Water Resources Department. The adjudication may be as discrete a program that as we have in the agency, because the rest of the programs are built upon one another. Again, it's our view that the agency is essential to the economic and the environmental health of this state. A key point is that there is not a federal backstop or counterpart to what we do. And in fact, this state has spent a lot of money to make sure that the record is clear that the state owns the water, not the federal government. And our FDE are at historic lows. With that, Madam Chair, we're ready to actually talk about numbers if you'd like to.
I think we ought to.
Can I just ask you a question? How do you determine on the Columbia River where or any river where you've got joint borders with the state? Who owns the water?
Madam Chair, Senator, that is a matter of some debate, because certainly we cannot dictate what the state of Washington does, nor can they dictate what we do. Now, in the Columbia, we're both driven to some extent by the federal endangered species interests on the Columbia. States have developed compacts. There are some numerous examples of those in the West. When they share a resource like the Columbia, there is a Columbia Compact, but it's not really, my recollection of it is that it is not really designed to address the water management issues, and I don't think it's really been used very much. But there are issues there. It's interesting because you have a number of irrigators in your district that have taken extraordinary steps to get water back into the Walla Walla River.
Yeah.
Well, you would tell that I was thinking of the Walla Walla. And we have, and so our folks have taken, have really done some creative things to get some water back in there because of the endangered fish issues, yet we are unable to protect that water when it goes into the state of Washington. And so our guys are looking at the junior users on the Washington side are saying, man, these are the best water years we've had for a long time. So there are issues ultimately, and we have talked really very little, but there has been talk occasionally about reviving a Columbia River compact to address some of these issues. That's something obviously that would take congressional action. It may be something we need to visit in the future.
Chair, if I just make a comment on the Walla Walla, because I've worked quite a bit with the Watershed Council there, just for the committee members to know, that's one of the roles that a Watershed Council can play. Not, obviously not in allocating water rights, but bringing, because they work in both Washington and Oregon, and I know they've talked and worked really hard at trying to bring landowners on both sides together so the Washington folks aren't sucking up all the water when we're putting it in. But, I mean, they can't, you know, they can't adjudicate or issue those water rights, but there are some instances where that's working.
That's fairly said, Representative. I don't want to imply that there's a that's not happening in Washington, because there is a tremendous amount of cooperation. Madam Chair, I've asked Mike Allman, who's the administrator of our business office, to join me here. So you may wish to have you may have detailed questions for him, and so that's why he's got the stand with me right now. Again, as Lisa identified, we're largely a general fund agency, and 66% with other funds from fees from counties, and then a fair number of federal funds as well. So again, I don't want to belabor things that Lisa has already covered, but just a look at by classification how our budget's broken out. So if you have any questions on these things, pretty standard fare, personal services being the lion's share of the agency budget. By division, you can see the technical services division, close to 30%. Field services is our largest division, as you can imagine. That's where the actual on-the-ground work happens. So they're the largest share of the agency budget. Water rights and adjudications, 13%. The director's office comes in at 7%. I think it's important to note that the majority of the attorney general expenditures, apart from the adjudication, the Klamath adjudication, are assigned to the director's office. So that inflates that. That's not just people. That's a lot of lawyer money. And as we all know, we still have conflicts over water in this state. We just don't resolve them with firearms anymore. We do it with lawyers. And you see the Water Development Loan Fund.
It's
and then
the
our
same. The results are the same. The process just takes longer.
Well, that's kind of a depressing thought, man.
A little less blood.
And then you see our Administrative Services Division coming in at 11%, which we feel like is a pretty efficient shop. And again, just another descriptor of how the budget's broken out in thousands. And you can see the percent increase or decrease there on the right hand side. The governor's budget is a 3% increase in general fund, and then a significant increase you see in there. And Lisa talked about the reasons for that in other funds. Federal funds, that big 10% drop there is that money we had expected at one time for the Klamath, and that did not materialize.
Is there any hope is that part of the current budget discussions, or is it off the table? Do we have any hope there?
Madam Chair, that's, I believe, off the table. And the reason being is that this whole adjudication went clear to the Oregon Supreme Court, did it not? And ultimately, the Supreme Court found that, yes, the federal government did have to come and participate in this process, that they were subject to Oregon law in this regard, but it found, interestingly enough, that they didn't have to pay any of the fees or associated with the adjudication that even a regular landowner has to pay. So, I think it's off the table as a result of those court decisions. We keep hoping for some benevolence from our federal partners, but we haven't found it yet. By source, again, a little bit of a rehash here, but oh, this is the revenue piece. I'm sorry, Mike woke me up here. Revenue coming in. Again, over half the agency revenue is the general fund appropriation. We were dealing with expenditures. Now we're on revenue. About 40%.
I want to go back to adjudications because it's significant to the agency. Talk to me. This is not a budget-oriented thing, but I'm trying to grapple with why we do them and what would happen if we didn't do them. What's the basis in law for doing them?
Adjudication actually establishes the ability to certificate. Yes, to certificate a water right. And so, let me give you a quick example. In the Klamath Basin, where we're not adjudicated, and we get in a tough water time, and so somebody has to be shut off. We can't regulate in the Klamath Basin today in favor of senior users because we have not adjudicated that basin. So we haven't established whether Mike's claim of a water right that he has in place is legitimate or not. Because
so do all states do adjudications?
Most western states, Madam Chair, do adjudications. State of Idaho just completed a significant adjudication on a snake that was similar to the Klamath in that it involved federal claims and Indian tribes.
So the goal then is to just establish with a legal basis the priority of the rights.
That's a good way to put it, Madam Chair.
Representative Shoffman.
I understand that many of the eastern states don't have anything like ours, but they are running into this incredible problem. Now, when they prove their right, they have to have some kind of documentation and history. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's a part of the adjudication process. It's establishing through documentation whether the claim that has been made is a true one.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think just to clarify what Phil's talking about is pre-1909 water rights.
Sorry.
So if there was any water right after that time, it's gone through the state process. There is a certificate, but it's all that group of pre-1909. You have no way of prioritizing within the people in that group, and that's what I believe.
That's exactly right. Thank you, Paul.
Being uncertain about the pre-1909 water rights, what impact does that uncertainty have on the more recent ones? Are they in a class by themselves and they're not impacted?
If I'm asserting that I have a pre-1909 water right, and ultimately I'm adjudicated to having, and my claim is upheld in the adjudication, then I would be senior to anyone after 1909.
So until you've actually gone back and sorted out all those pre-1909 ones, the post-1909 ones are also up in the air.
Is that a fair statement?
Well, I just had a follow-up. What percentage of our basins have been adjudicated in the state? Do we have that in there?
Okay. So the colored stuff there is essentially is the majority of the state's been adjudicated. 67%.
So just a follow-up, because the budget, we've just been talking about the Klamath. So do you have it in your long-term strategic plan about how you're going to fund the other adjudications? Because eventually it'll be an issue. I mean, it could be an issue in other basins as well, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's very correct, and we would, I think, when we finish the Klamath, we will come to you for a proposal to continue adjudication funding. We may elect to propose a more modest level, but I think...
I was looking at Clatsop County.
I think it's safe to say that we're committed to this, to some level of funding. Probably till well after I'm retired.
Well, and you, I must admit that you kind of raised my eyebrows when you started talking about adjudicating underground water, too. That was...
The water code for groundwater began in was established in 1951, and so prior to 1951, we'll ultimately have to adjudicate groundwater rights. Is that correct?
Under current law.
Senator Russell.
Listen, going back to 1909 pre and subsequent, after 1909 they call them water, you issue water permits, and that, then you have the adjudication. I mean, you, but they're part of the adjudication. Is that right? No, they're not part of the adjudication.
No.
They're not.
Subsequent to 1909 permits that ultimately can become certificated water rights if we work through the process and if you make it through our backlog, those are certificated water rights. They may ultimately be junior to some pre-1909 rights where there's an adjudication pending.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Again, this
so,
is...
So let me just reiterate one more thing to make sure that we've got this all straight. If you've got a pre-1909 water right, if you're in a place that's not adjudicated, do you still bump the post-1909 water rights?
Madam Chair, I don't believe that you do. If you have a pre-1909 claim, we can't regulate in your favor until that claim is adjudicated and it actually becomes a right.
So the adjudication process gives the pre-1909 water rights some authenticity and defines them in law.
That's correct, Madam Chair. It's actually a very important economic activity.
Just to follow up.
Senator.
One of the previous slides, you had the 730 adjudicated claim. That's pre-1909. And then there was another figure of 5,000 or... What was that? The contest, 5,650. Is that the post 1909, or what does the contest mean?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think what we've got here is that in the Klamath adjudication, there were 729 claims for water filed. Of those 729, 491, or 67% of those, have been resolved. So we're in good shape. But for those 729 claims, there were 5,649 contests filed for those 700 claims. So you can tell there's a lot of, there are a few differing opinions as to the validity of the claims in the adjudication. Now, the good news is we've resolved 87% of the contests. And some of those, when you actually get into it, fall away pretty quickly. You find contests that don't have merit, and you can identify that pretty quickly. But, again, that's a great exclamation point on the interest in this issue.
These are all pre-1909 claims.
So the contests would be... Someone, there's a claim that's at issue, and the contests are all the people that have an interest in that claim putting their point of view forward?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. So if I could contest your claim for a water right, I assume I could contest whether the chair would be asserting that she was senior to my claim. I might be contesting the date of your claim. I might be contesting the scope of your claim.
One last question, since we went down that path anyway. But so how do tribal rights fit in is that determined in federal court?
Madam Chair, Representative, the tribes are participating in the adjudication, and their claim is for a certain level of right, essentially to support fish flow on these streams, for, and their claims are from time immemorial. So they are obviously claiming the most senior right.
Okay. Just want to make sure I was understanding that.
Now, let me just add one closing piece of really good news on this issue. One of your former colleagues, Senator Steve Harper, has been, since he left the legislature, has made it his project to help settle some of these major water issues in the Klamath Basin. And he has actually been brokering settlement discussions between the tribes and the Upper Basin irrigators, and the Upper Basin irrigators and the project irrigators, the folks who use the water from the Bureau of Reclamation Project, and the project irrigators and the tribes. They actually inked in Senator Smith's office in Washington, D.C. last month a draft agreement between the tribes and the Upper Basin irrigators. If this, if we're able to complete that agreement and actually get it in place, it could be the first domino that kind of knocks these big claims off in place. Because I think folks have come to understand down there that it's in everybody's best interest to settle these claims in a way that gives everybody a piece of the pie. Okay, so any questions on this slide? If not, we'll move on to the next one. These are the source of the monies that we receive.
So the contracts are with the counties?
Madam Chair, essentially these are contracts with local governments, largely for assistant water masters.
Mr. Siebert.
Madam Chair, I wanted to make sure too. Now, I know you have some authority for expending federal dollars as other funds, so there would be some contracts with federal agencies that would fall underneath this other funds contract system.
Correct. Mike Common with the Water Resources Department, Administrator of the Administrative Services Division, and that's correct. In that contracts category, we do have federal funds that are received as other funds, and those are spent under that same category.
What would be an example of a federal contract?
One of the things addressed here would be, for instance, with the OLAP, the money received for the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund. Those are federal funds. By the time we get to this, those are other funds.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. This slide's a snapshot of our fees. So you can see where we receive money in our budget relative to fees. Water right fees, if you go to Dwight French from our water rights division, you've got to pay him to apply for a water right. And that's 47% of our fee budget. Transfer fees, move water rights around, 17%. Hydroelectric fees is a significant piece. They're actually, does not represent all the hydroelectric fees that come to the agency, because much of what we receive, as we're the coordinator of the state's hydroelectric relicensing effort, and so we receive monies in, pay a lot of money out to other agencies for the work they do along these lines, but 10% of our budget relates to those fees. Start card fees is another, down at the bottom is another important fee. Every well driller, every time he drills a well, pays us
$150.
$125. Here's the nitty gritty of the governor's budget for us in terms of investments and reductions. And you see the investment side on the left, some significant funding to actually fund us fully at the levels that we've actually been expending towards the Klamath adjudication in recent years. And POP 161 contains that. There are a number of other fund POPs. You can see articulated below.
Two limited duration positions that are in the first POP, are those new positions or are those continuations of previously authorized?
Madam Chair, those are continuations of positions that have been as limited duration as long as we've had them. So you will see them probably next session again, a request from us to reauthorize those.
And then the AG expense, in the current budget cycle that we're in right now, how much are you spending on AG for the Klamath?
I believe that number is around 500,000. I would have to research it and get back to you.
We're going to be close to, it strikes me that it's a little more, Madam Chair, than 500,000, but that's the level that we're in. And does this number, Mike, include the Office of Administrative Hearings? So this is not, I guess that's a bit of a poor descriptor there. This includes both the Attorney General and the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is actually where a lot of our legal expense in the adjudication is at right now, because all these claims that are not contests, that are not resolved, ultimately goes to
the
hearings
officer.
Yes.
Could we get a breakout on what you have in your current budget and what you're proposing?
Be happy to do that, Madam Chair. The other fund positions that you see here are, again, largely continuations, as you identified above, Madam Chair. The positions here, I don't believe are new, any of these, are they? These are all continuing current limited duration positions with other fund revenues. The exception to that are the bottom two boxes. A half a position limited duration to work on groundwater registration. This relates a little bit to some of our earlier discussion. And then a half a position for limited duration for the reimbursement authority program. That's the fee for service program that you all established last biennium, that we're proposing to continue in this budget.
And what would be the function of that position?
That, Madam Chair, we can talk about that a little more in detail, but just quickly, that, Madam Chair, is a program that allows folks who may be way back in one of our
I know what the program is. I'm just wondering what half a person reimburses for.
What we've found, Madam Chair, is that our existing staff are spending a lot of time doing the nuts and bolts coordination for this program, and rather than doing their regular jobs. And so we're estimating that that's actually been about a half of an FTE. And so with fee revenues from the program, we're proposing to establish a half of an FTE to actually coordinate this activity, oversee the contracting and that kind of thing. Madam Chair, that is the detail on the budget. Sorry, I did not move to the right side. Let me do that. The right side of this graph is the reductions from the governor's budget. Gosh, I missed the best stuff. So you can see that this budget proposes to reduce our FTE by 7.5, a little over $1 million. We're going to lose part of our reception, part of our customer service counter. These are the front counter people. When people walk in, these are the people that respond to them. Our customer service group is two people, so we'll be cutting that in half. We lose a computer programmer in these cuts. We lose a policy position in the director's office. We lose some support in the water rights division. We lose one of our few positions that actually writes certificates. So the certificate's the end of the water rights process. And so we lose a position there. And then we lose a position in our water use and measurement and reporting staff. We also lose our last groundwater study money. So this zeroes out, I think, if I'm correct, a budget that was once over $600,000 over the last three biennium. This now zeroes that out. So we will not have capacity to partner with the federal government to continue the groundwater research work that has been underway in the Klamath Basin, the Willamette Basin, and is being proposed for the Umatilla Basin. And then the last piece here, there was a general fund infusion into the loan program, the Water Development Loan Fund that we talked about, and it's our analysis that this program is solvent, no longer needs that general fund infusion, and so this removes the last vestige of general fund from that program.
Are, I'm assuming, going to have an opportunity at some point to discuss in more detail what losing those positions within programs is going to impact for the service level of the program.
Madam Chair, the division administrators would like to have the opportunity to do that with you Monday or whenever it works for your schedule.
And the groundwater study, I think, is definitely a victim of the economic downturn. That was something that there was a great deal of interest expressed in before the crash, so to speak. But the
That's certainly we believe that ultimately to make good decisions about water allocation, you need to have good data. And that's one of the things that I've appreciated in the 2 years I've been with this agency is that it's really a science-based staff. And they are very committed to making decisions based on data. So the upshot, what you tend to see when you don't know the real condition of the resource is you see your water managers perhaps being more conservative just to make sure that we don't do things that are going to, in the long term, put us in a big hole. And so ultimately, we would hope in better economic times. In fact, we'll come back with proposals, I'm sure, in the future to restore some of these monies. Madam Chair, that's what we have in terms of budget detail. We can move into actual division discussions of the division programs if you like.
Well, today we have still a half an hour, and so are you prepared to move ahead today?
We are, Madam Chair, if that's your pleasure.
I do. I would like to move ahead.
Then I'd like to have Dwight French from the Water Rights and Adjudication Division join me. Dwight's the acting administrator of that division. His boss, Dick Bailey, who some of you may know, is actually out on some pretty serious extended sick leave, but Dwight has stepped in and has managed that division now for several months for us and has been with the agency how many years, Dwight?
15.
So he's been around this business for a while. So I'll run this for you, Dwight.
Right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dwight French, Phil introduced me. I'm just going to take a few minutes to go through some of the major programs of the within the Water Rights and Adjudication Division. We're probably the most high-profile thing that we do is review applications for new water right permits. And when someone gets a permit, there are several conditions on that. One important one is the development timeline. And if a person needs more time to develop their permit, they file for a permit extension. That's the second bullet up there. Once someone is done with their development, they file a claim of beneficial use. That's an attempt to get a certificate. I'll talk about that in a couple minutes. Our customer service group, our front counter, is the staffing of that is housed in the Water Rights and Adjudication Division. Limited license is a smaller program I'll talk about in a couple minutes. The Klamath Adjudication is staffed from our division. and we're the state coordinator for the hydroelectric licensing and relicensing, and of course water right related policy and programs we work on also. Here's a slide that shows over the past 15 or 16 years the application rate. You'll see 2004 was a low year in terms of some of our recent years. A couple highlights there. In 89 to 91, we had about 1,000 in-stream water right applications filed from mostly ODF and W, but also DEQ and state parks, so that inflated those numbers in that period. And then 2001 was we had a drought activity and about 100 applications for emergency drought permits filed in 2001. So that's part of the uptick there. Our approval rate has remained at just over 90%. People aren't necessarily getting as much water as they wanted or during the summer season as much as they wanted. But part of the reason that the numbers of applications have dropped a little bit is because we do have a lot of pre-application conferences, and we're able to give people, based on our experience, a pretty reasonable or kind of a reality check on what their chances of getting or limitations might be to getting a water right permit. So as a result, the approval number stays up, but the number of applications coming in is somewhat reduced.
Let me just emphasize that, if I can, Madam Chair. Basically, what Dwight has done is he's moved his staff to, before people pay an application fee, which are not cheap. We've had application fees in the tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. So before people make that expenditure, he's having his staff sit down with people and talk about what the probability of success for that application is, and then they can choose to go forward or not. So that's the real reason why you see such a high. I don't want to imply that we're just handing out water rights left and right. What we're doing is we're catching people before they've made an economic investment, and we feel that's the right thing to do from a customer service perspective.
Our water masters partake in the pre-application conferences also in our field offices. Just real quickly, past 3 years, the application by major type, surface water, groundwater, the larger reservoirs, not as much activity there because in the mid-90s we had the alternate reservoir, it was an alternate, faster process. So 2004 was a little bit of a down year, but most of the new water being allocated in this state is from small reservoirs and groundwater, which makes sense, I think.
Our alternate reservoirs, what does that mean?
Alternate reservoir is the kind of term of art in the statute. It's an alternate process.
The new simple process.
Well, we're working on even a simpler, speedier process. Sometimes it's called the expedited process for small reservoirs. But
these are little guys.
Less than 9.2 acre feet or a dam less than 10 feet high.
Ponds.
You need one of those two.
Exactly.
Oftentimes it's called ponds. Yeah.
This is, and didn't this grow out of the ponds bill some years ago?
Yeah.
And did the state's attempt to help make legal a lot of small reservoirs that were around the state.
Representative Schaffler.
But now there's a lot of ag people that are interested in this way of storing water. Nurserymen out by Damascus and out that way, correct?
That's correct.
Right.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's very correct.
Thank you.
This is a graph that we look at a lot internally and thought I'd show it to you. What we try to do is see in each year, you can see the middle bar is the number of final orders issued. We try to have that number be higher than the bar just to its left, the number of applications received. We look at this on a monthly basis to see what we can do about the bar on the right side of each year, which is the active files in each at year end, or the number of applications that are sitting, waiting for staff to work on right now. We're trying to get that decreased, and we stay ahead of that by getting more final decisions out than applications received.
Madam Chair, a question. Does this information include transfers, or is it only for issuing new water rights?
Just water right permits. The transfer section is in the Field Services Division, and Tom Paul will be talking to you about that later.
Since we're over-appropriated or fully appropriated in so many basins, I'm just perplexed on how we're still issuing so many new water rights. Or maybe, I thought we were shifting more into transfers now because that's basically where there was more water to be had.
We are. There's still a lot of opportunities for storage, and we get the alternate reservoirs that I mentioned, and we also have areas of the state which aren't over allocated in terms of groundwater use, and so that's where the bulk of the new appropriations are coming from.
All right, so just a clarification, Madam Chair. So this includes both surface water and groundwater. However, the transfers are not included in that bar graph. Okay. Thank you.
A lot of the surface water applications, by the way, are to use stored water. So they're not necessarily to take live flow water, we call it, out of the river or stream, but to use water that's already been stored in some project.
So we really have seen a move to groundwater and to storage here in Oregon because people have learned that's where they need to go if they want a new right.
We mentioned in our POP presentation a few minutes ago that one of the positions we're losing is in the certificate area. We've got a backlog in that area of holding steady at about 6,000 permits awaiting their certificate. The reimbursement authority program isn't really going to have much of a dent in these numbers. But it does give people, individuals, an opportunity to get their certificate, move in that direction if they have some need to do so.
And Madam Chair, members, some folks, for example, the gentleman in your district that recently chatted with you and I, oftentimes folks need a certificate to be able to do things that they would like to do with their water right, for example, change a point of diversion.
A transfer.
Or a transfer. Mm-hmm. So to transfer that water right, you can't transfer it unless it's a certificated right. And so that's one of the reasons that this is important, but there are opportunities for folks to use our reimbursement authority process if they're really in a bind in that regard.
Just a graph regarding the number of protests that we receive. It's hard to predict how many protests you're going to get in a given year. Obviously, it's affected by how many proposed final orders or opportunities for protests there are. You can get several protests on one application and drive the numbers way up. We work hard, really hard, at working with protestants and applicants on settlements to see what we can come up with instead of going to a more expensive contested case. Most of the protests we get are from applicants who are not happy with the proposal that the department is making on their application. And sometimes we're able to come to a agreement that can happen given water availability and other concerns in the area. A relatively small program, just about a quarter of a person is limited license applications. I just mention this because as the state becomes more and more over-appropriated, as we run out of water, folks are looking more for alternate ways to get, you know, their hands on water, maybe just for a short period of time, for a construction project or to meet some short-term need. The limited license is a tool in the statute and rules that is allowed for that. And in 2001, we had an uptick because about 50 limited licenses were issued related to the drought. But generally, it's a program that continues to grow.
So, Madam Chair, these are good for only a year, I think, if I'm correct.
Well,
is that
you,
right?
No, droughts are only permits are only available for the irrigation season. A limited license is rarely issued for up to 5 years, but it's possible. many of them are just for a couple months for a short-term construction project. A couple of highlights real quickly. Some of the things that we did in the last couple of years related to certificates and the final proof surveys that come in. We revised our rules governing how that those claims of beneficial use comes in to make them more uniform, makes them easier for us to review. We helped implement the department's reimbursement authority program and the extensions of time and certificate program is in the water rights division related to that program. We also, during the past couple of years, have reduced the extensions of time. They were pending at about 500 at the beginning of the biennium, and we've cut that roughly in half, and we'll continue to make progress over the next couple of months. We've reduced the new application active file workload. That's the number of files that are awaiting action right now, from 756 at the end of 2002 to 260 or just a couple of weeks ago. And we've made a couple comments about the calamity adjudication, and we've got the hearings on the remaining claims scheduled for completion by the end of 2007. One point I wanted to make there was that the schedule is really controlled by the Office of Administrative Hearings. They manage the hearing process. So it's possible that the Office of Administrative Hearings may have to extend the process to make sure that some group of claimants or protestant gets their due diligence or their process afforded to them. But the department and the Office of Administrative Hearings are working hard to make sure that we have a schedule that's fairly aggressive. As I mentioned, we are the state coordinator on hydroelectric licensing and relicensing, and we've been involved in several major projects over the past couple of years.
Madam Chair.
Representative Schaffer.
How long are those licensing agreements for?
Generally 40 to 50 years.
I spoke to a woman. She was here with some farm folks, and she lives down by Representative Girard's district. I think Bly Valley is that. Am I getting that right? And she was telling me that her electric rates were just going to go up. They're at the end of their licensing. I mean, just in like multiple of 10. Now, is that true, or is she overly concerned? Does she have reason to be concerned? And to the point where she's not going to be able to pay her electric bill to pump her water out and irrigate her crops. Is how much should we be concerned about that right here?
Madam Chair, Representative, if I may, that is true. The PacifiCorps facilities down in Klamath, in the Klamath Basin, are coming to the end of their 50-year licensing period. The irrigators down there had a tremendously favorable rate that was negotiated over 50 years ago and has been in place at that level for 50 years. It's far below, say, what an irrigator might pay for electricity up in this part of the state. So, as I understand it, PacifiCorps has actually presented all its customers with mock bills for what their rates will be a year from now, because the rate goes away, the current rate goes away in April of 2006, and the increases are at the levels that you talked about or greater. So significant implications, given the fact that in an attempt to take pressure off the lake because of the endangered species issues, a lot of irrigators have moved to groundwater pumping, have drilled wells and are pumping groundwater, which of course takes more electricity to move. You've got to pull that water up out of the ground. So there are significant implications, and those are part of the relicensing negotiations that are ongoing right now with PacifiCorps in the Klamath Basin.
So then, I think it relates to this. If I have a water right, does the Endangered Species Act and the in-stream flow trump my water right?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think what we saw in 2001 was that we saw water not delivered to farmers in the Klamath Project because of endangered species considerations. And I think there's all sorts of litigation continuing to work its way out regarding that. But we have seen that happen to folks. Now, in the year since 2001, we've been working, frankly, very closely with the Bureau of Reclamation down there and have put in place some things to prevent that kind of thing from happening in that basin again.
Those folks down there whose electric bills are going to go up so high, how many of them have expressed the made comments that they're just going to throw in the towel and give it up? Anybody?
You know, having watched quite closely the negotiations around the North Umpqua Hydro Project, these are processes that take place over several years, and there are exhaustive negotiations with a lot of people at the table to work it out. So I would hesitate to say with any certainty that those folks down in that area are not going to be able to come up with some kind of a reasonable solution to their problem.
I hope that's the case, Madam Chair. Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'm in no way, shape, or form blaming this department. I'm just asking questions because I'm curious.
So, Madam Chair, this is Mr. French's opportunity to talk in detail with you about the POP, the POPs related to his budget. So POP 090 relates to governor's budget reductions, and Dwight, if you could articulate for us what this means for your division.
Sure. This particular POP mentions the three positions in the water rights division that are scheduled for elimination in the governor's budget. One position is in the customer service area. Right now I have two people that work the customer service counter. We're still going to serve the people that walk in and need our help, but what we're going to have to do is kind of bleed and borrow from the remaining staff to cover when we can't handle it with one person up there. So that causes a slight reduction over several people, you know, their ability to get their work done. So we still have to do the customer service work. We're just going to spread that impact over some other people.
What would cause someone to come in the front door rather than get information some other way?
Well, a lot of the customers that we see are here local, and you know the majority of water rights are right here in the Willamette Valley, and so they instead of going to their local water master's office, they would come to the headquarters office, and they might want to have a pre-application or talk about opportunities for getting water, or they might want some help with some research, or they may come in and want copies of our official paper record. They get, you know, you name it, people come in and want some help looking up something or need some help to understand certain restrictions better.
These folks, Madam Chair, also serve people who call or who people who've been to the website and need some help interpreting what they found there.
So out in the rest of the state, those similar questions might be handled at the local water master's office. But there's so many water rights right here in the population center, if you will, of Oregon, right here in the valley, that we tend to handle a lot of traffic at the headquarters office right here. And that just happens to be housed in the Water Rights Adjudication Division within the headquarters office. Also, we have a team of support positions in the division that support all the functions of the Water Rights and Adjudication Division. And we are looks like we're going to lose one of those positions, which means there'll be some, you know, we're always looking for ways to work, get the same amount of work done with less staff, or to work smarter. What we're going to have to do is have little bits of support handled by other staff that maybe aren't used to doing some of those support functions themselves. And then the certificate issuance position, I have two people that handle the certificate program, and losing one of them means we cut our ability to issue certificates in half. A large part of what those two people also do is talk to certified water right examiners who need help or guidance getting the claims of beneficial use prepared for permit holders who are done with their development. And we're going to have a tougher time providing good support to those people.
Another shocker.
That is an economic development issue right there. Do you have any idea how many businesses will be impacted by that? And I mean, that's a revenue impact on the state, I imagine.
Well,
Madam Chair, Representative, I think the reason this position was selected for reduction ultimately is that people can continue to use water even if they don't have the certificate. They can use it under a permit. The place that catches us, though, is the example we were talking about earlier. If you want to do something, if you want to transfer that water right, then you can't do that under Oregon law unless you have a certificated right. So it would be disingenuous of us to say this won't have an economic effect on folks. It will. It will cause the backlog in the certificate program to increase. What we'll have to do is be alert to the kind of situations that we discovered with one of the chair's constituents where he needed to do something and wasn't getting action for us, so he raised his hand and we were able to get to it. But it is an economic issue. Folks, however, can use water under a permit.
Now, these folks that get in the backlog, can they go through that system that we created where they go out and hire their own folks and get in that queue too, if they have the money, resources to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative, okay. They can.
Good, thank you.
Also, POP 90 and POP 161 and 162 are the packages that that impact the Water Rights and Adjudication Division, and all three of them have parts of the climate adjudication support in them. The 090 has some money in it. POP 161 is the continuation of the two limited duration positions, and then there's some additional fees in 162. General fund money that make up to those. All three of these packages conspire to support the adjudication program.
The additional money for the Klamath, the 117. What happens if that isn't funded?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it impacts our ability to keep up. And you know, one of the struggles we have is not only we have to slow down on our activity because we might not be able to afford Department of Justice moving forward with as many cases or as many hearings as we'd like. So we might have to contact the Office of Administrative Hearings and say that we can't afford the current pace. We're going to have to slow down a little bit because we have to cut our expenses.
It's further out in eternity.
Right. Which I'm convinced that the longer the adjudication goes, the more expensive it's going to be. So it hurts at times to make it, to keep it going fast, but in the end, we're going to get done faster with less money.
This is probably a good place to take a break because we're at the end of the time that we have, but I think that we made good progress today, and I thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Siebert, do you have any announcements for us before we adjourn this meeting?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on Monday the department will continue with the presentation, and we also have an opportunity for public testimony.
Thank you. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 5073 and adjourn this meeting.